Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Muni Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we have first canto, chapter 17, text 22, Srimad Bhagavatam. Rajovacha.
Rajovacha.
Dharman Brabishi Dharmagya.
Dharman Brabishi Dharmagya.
Dharmosi Vrishabhupadrik.
Dharmosi Vrishabhupadrik.
Yada Dharma Krita Stanam. Shucha Kasya Pitarbhavet.
Shucha Kasya Pitarbhavet.
Rajovacha.
Dharmam Bravishi Dharmagya.
Dharmam Bravishi Dharmagya.
Dharmosi Vrishabhupadrik.
Dharmosi Vrishabhupadrik.
Yada Dharma Krita Sthanam.
Yada Dharma Krita Sthanam.
Shucha Kasyapi Tadbhavet.
Shucha Kasyapi Tadbhavet. Raja Uvacha.
Raja Uvacha.
The king said.
The king said.
Dharmam.
Dharmam.
Religion.
Religion.
Brabishi.
Brabishi.
As you speak.
As you speak.
Dharmagnya.
Dharmagnya.
One who knows the code of religion.
One who knows the code of religion.
Dharmaha.
Dharmaha.
The personality of religion.
The personality of religion.
Asi.
Asi.
You are.
You are.
Vrisha Rupa Drik.
Vrisha Rupa Drik.
In the disguise of a bull.
In the disguise of a bull.
Yat.
Yat.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Adharma.
Adharma.
Krittaha.
Krittaha.
One who acts irreligiously.
One
that acts religiously.
Stanam. Stanam.
Place.
Place.
Sucha Kasya.
Sucha Kasya.
Of the identifier.
Of the identifier.
Api.
Api.
Also.
Also.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
That.
Bhavet.
Bhavet.
Dharmam Bravishti Dharma Jnya Dharmosi Vrishabhupadrik. Yada Dharma Katastanam Suchakasya Pita Bhavet. Translation from the Prabhupada. The king said, O you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion, and you are speaking according to the principles at the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for the one who identifies the perpetrator. You are no other than the personality of religion. Please repeat. The king said.
The king said.
O you.
O you.
Who are in the form of a bull.
Who are in the form of a bull.
You know the truth of religion.
You know the truth of religion.
And you are speaking according to the principle. At the destination intended,
for the perpetrator of irreligious acts,
is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator.
You are no other than the personality of religion.
Okay, Prima Krishna Prabhupada. It's a great honor to be here. Hare Krishna. My name is Hanumat Preshak, and I was initiated in 1974. And my name is a little odd. It means one who sent Hanuman, the sender of Hanuman, with a message. Who's that? Yes. Or else it could also be Hanumat Preshika, right? Which would be Sita. Hanumat Preshaka, Hanumat Preshika. Okay. And we've been doing different work, but one of the things we're developing is actually, of course, this Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhai Bhava program, because Prabhupada recommended that we study his book systematically. And Bhakti Shastri, he said, everyone who has a second initiation, he said, should have the Bhakti Shastri certificate. So he recommended different books, and now it includes Bhagavad Gita, Upadeshamrita, Isopanishad, and the first part of Nectar of Devotion. A very good fundamental education. Then he said everybody who was a Goswami or taking sannyas initiation should have Bhakti Bhai Bhava, and for that he suggested the first six cantos, like that. You know? And so, because the Bhagavatam, Idam Bhagavata Nama Puranam Ramasamitam Uttama Shloka Charitam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God. The first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. Cantos 3 and 4 are his legs. 5 is his waist, navel. 6, chest. 7, 8, arms. 9. And 10 is his face. And especially chapters 29 through 34, the 5 chapters that deal with the Rasa-lila, are Krishna's smile. Like that. And then 11, and then 12 is a crown like that. So very much this literary incarnation of God. Yeah. And in different Vedic literature, someplace, it says that the other Puranas, they're very beautiful, they're very brilliant, they're so impressive, until the moon of Srimad Bhagavatam comes up. And it's like, oh, he's bigger than we are, yeah, much. You know. So one very respected emeritus professor from University of Madras, he was telling the Radhika and devotees at Oxford, he was teaching there, very respected. He said, I've read all the major Sanskrit literatures and most of the minor ones, and I'm not bragging or anything, because I've been doing this for 45 years, so after that much time, I should have, done this. You know. So he says, when it says that the Bhagavatam is like this, and these glories like the moon compared to the stars, he says it's not an exaggeration. He said for the depth of the philosophy, for the beauty of the poetry, for the sophistication of the grammar, he says Srimad Bhagavatam is in a class by itself, like that. It's so great. You know. There are words, Sanskrit words in the Bhagavatam that only occur in Srimad Bhagavatam, like that, and go on for a long time like that. You know. So different devotees have written very, very, what's the word, authorized glorifications of the qualities of the Bhagavatam. But of course, the British had this whole program, you know, with colonial arrogance. You know, the only culture that's worth anything in the world is European culture. That was the idea. And it spread through the Spanish to South America, and Italian, and Portuguese, and the Germans, you know, Dutch to North America, French. And to India, it came here through the English. The English were so kind to deliver this idea here and tell you that all of your culture is trash, rubbish, you know, like that. You know, they actually even made the statement that all the Indian literature wouldn't be worth one bookcase of good English literature, like that. So, okay. So many arrogant statements. And then they started a systematic program. There's actually, you know, documents that of intentionally trying to destroy Sanskrit language, forbidding people to study it, having people intentionally mistranslate it, you know, so that people would lose faith, lose understanding, appreciation of the Sanskrit literature. Okay. But all over the world now, not just here, people are rejecting this colonial, intellectual, cultural colonialism. The political colonialism was kicked out in different places, different revolutions, okay, pretty much finished. But this intellectual and cultural colonialism continues everywhere. In India, when people go to school and study psychology, they study Freud. This is ridiculous. You know? Everybody knows, you know, the greatest psychology in the world is India. Yeah. So, you know, now people are starting to appreciate different cultures and they're starting to, like, investigate their own cultures and other cultures like that for what they have to offer, and just tremendous things that far surpass in the European culture in its own particular, you know, in their own ways, you know, and so on. So of course, so therefore we have world classical literature, the Bible, the Quran, Don Quixote, Dharmapada, Sun Wukong from China, Thousand and One Arabian Nights, you know, so many famous books around the world. But actually looking at these, again, if you look at Srimad Bhagavatam, again, it's a fact. It's just far and away, in every aspect, you know, better. But because the British covered it, nobody knew about this. But now devotees, especially because of Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, has created this interest, this focus. He told Hansa Duda, I am Marx, you are Lenin. Okay. He meant all of us. He was laying the seeds, doing so many things like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta, then Prabhupada. And now we have to carry this on. You know, Prabhupada gave us so many tools, right, to do these things, and everybody has their own way of doing it. You know? So anyway, this devotees who are scholars, for example, Radhika Raman, our good scholar, he and Krishna Kshetra have written a book on contemporary thinking on Srimad Bhagavatam by very authorized scholars. And this is being published by it's a big, very respected academic press, university press, and it's going to come out probably within a month or two. And it's going to cause a lot of, you know, reaction like that, you know. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj's PhD thesis was finally published about 6 months ago or something like that, you know. And his whole thesis was that Prabhupada was not a clever leader of a bunch of hippies like that, and got his thing going. But he also was a very profound theologian, and he's given us a very standardized theology from an Indian tradition like that. And so his PhD thesis works to establish that very clearly. 7 years ago, it probably wouldn't have been accepted; it might have been rejected and given a bad name. So maybe Krishna kept it until coming out now. And the person who edited it, and he gives it forward, is Joseph Lipner, who was his PhD mentor, who was a very respected theologian. So it's coming out and now in the academic world, people are starting to look towards Prabhupada, but before they were terrified. You know, if you said, I hate Prabhupada, that you're out of here. If you just say the word, we don't care if you like him or hate him, don't even say the P word. Forget the P word like that. You know? So it was just there. You know, rejecting him totally. But now, because they're seeing so many devotees acting properly, playing the game, not, you know, rocking the boat, you know, disturbing the division of money, then now they're starting to think, well, maybe A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is something to offer. Well, look at this. What do you think of this? Oh, very nice. Because Tamal Krishnamurti gives very, proper discussion of this topic, in terms of their language and everything else like that. Kridayananda Maharaj, Abhinya Swarup, others were very amazed at how he was able to pick up the language and the standards so well in just a short time like that. Tamal Krishnamurti's good. So things are going on. They're going on in a very big way. This academic intellectual preaching sometimes doesn't show up as immediately as a big festival with food distribution or meeting people on the street. But because it starts with the people who are teaching the teachers. But then you see it. They teach the students what they heard, which was reasonable. Oh, I have nice ideas. So we're actually seeing what Lord Chaitanya said. My name will be glorified in every town and village on the face of the earth. And the person who's responsible is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Okay. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the heart. Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna. Krishne Svadama Upagate Amayana Devi Saha. Now that Krishna has gone, Srimad Bhagavatam is a shelter for knowledge, religion, etc. People who've lost their vision due to the dense darkness of Kali Yuga will get light out of this Purana. So for the next few days, we'll have a seminar on light of the Bhagavata. Okay, brought it right in there. So, meanwhile, back at the first canto. 2.2.12. You can put it in your notes there if you want to. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.12. Prabhupada mentions sex desire 23 times in the purport. Sex desire, sex desire, sex desire. Sometimes you think he says like sexual attraction or something. Sex desire, sex desire. And then he says, the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are Krishna's lotus feet. And one should not dare to recite beyond the first two cantos as long as one is still entangled in gross, illicit sex. So basically, if you're not following the four principles, you should probably stick with the first two cantos. And the third canto starts to describe, more intense things. If you commit sinful activities, you'll go to hell. And Kapila Devi describes hell in a very intense fashion. And it's worse than the Muslim hell, it's worse than the Christian hell. The Chinese hell, again, kind of keeps some competition with it. Like that. So, but definitely it's a real hell. Like that. And then the first two cantos, And also the other side it describes illicit sex and the result and licit sex. So who's engaging in really good licit sex in the third canto? Kardama and Devahuti. Okay, you still have material attachments? Okay, try it out. I don't want to. And Krishna said, look, the quickest way is to go through this thing. So Kardama, you get married to Devahuti, she's beautiful, she's chaste, she's a veritable cow of plenty. You marry Kashyapa, he has a big mustache, a nice car, so on. So they were devotees. They chanted all their rounds. They followed the four principles, but then they really enjoyed themselves. You read the pages, it's like, wow, it's like, what's the stuff in there? So you can't even describe it. But it was all, within the range of Dharma, within the range of the Krishna consciousness for making some advancement in spiritual life. And it worked. In one lifetime, they finished it all off. They both went back to Godhead. What do you want? So most of us, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas is a natural progression. You just go through it naturally. It's like that. So third canto is very intense. So the amongst the first two cantos, the first canto is more or less a preface, right? In the preface of the book, it'll tell you why the book is being written. What are the qualifications of the author? Under what circumstances the book is being written? What qualifications we expect of the reader? I am a mathematics teacher at Centre High School in Centre, Australia. Okay. I discovered there were no good books on calculus for high school students. So in the school year of 2005, myself, my fellow teachers and students of Center High School wrote this book on calculus for high school students. It is expected the student will have already finished analytical geometry. That's the preface. So first canto we find, who is Maharaj Parikshit? Who is Sukadeva Goswami? And what is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam? And under what circumstances it's being written? Okay. You look through it. First three chapters are Sutta talking to the sages. Next three chapters is Sukha talking to Narada Muni. Okay, then the whole thing is that Sukadeva Sutta Goswami is going to give them Srimad Bhagavatam. But before he does that, because it's a Purana, he steps back and tells them the circumstance. You know, the Brahmastra weapon had been thrown. Maharaj Parikshit was going to experience this. Krishna's going to leave Dwarka. No, Krishna's going to leave Hastinapur, arrive in Dwarka. But then maybe looking at the audience and seeing how they're reacting, he says, okay, let's go back even a little farther. So then he goes back for a few more chapters and gives even more details about the whole situation. Then finally he gets back into the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, the disappearance of the Pandavas, the appearance of Maharaj Parikshit and Miss Kali Yuga, like that. And then finally we're ready for the meeting of Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. So the first canto gives us incredible perspective, you know what we call it? Background. So finally when Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami meet, if we've studied it properly, we know this is not an ordinary meeting. This is a meeting between, you know, when did Sukadeva Goswami's spiritual life begin? Yeah, you heard Srimad Bhagavatam. When did Maharaj Parikshit's spiritual life begin? Yeah, okay. How many people here, their spiritual life began in the womb? Maybe some of it did. I don't know. Maybe it did, yeah. Your mother was reading Bhagavatam by the mercy of Prabhupada. Yeah, yeah. And it's very important because the mother is not just a bag of chemicals. You know, when you're in gestation, there's a lot going on, you know, in terms of the development of the embryo and everything else like that and so on. You know? So this is, you know, and what else? You know, so many things about their qualifications. So finally, here we are, chapter 17, 17, 18, 19, probably 16. 16 is, what is 16? I forgot here, 16. How Parikshit received the age of Kali. Yeah, yeah. So these four chapters are the meeting of Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. Yeah. How Parikshit received the age of Kali. Okay. Punishment and reward of Kali, and then I think Parikshit unfairly cursed, which we all get this, okay? And then finally, they're meeting like that. So here, of course, we're going through this whole thing of, 1720? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think he's meeting Dharma and Bhumi in the form of a bull and a cow, and then he asks this question, who is doing this to you? And Dharma gives this real philosophical explanation like that. And Maharaj Parikshit says, wow, you have to be Dharma personified. But you rascal. So he's a Kshatriya. Comes back down to a very practical application. So this verse specifically is a very, very nice verse. The king said, oh, you are in the form of a bull. You know the truth of religion and you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. You are no other than the personality of religion. So this is a fundamental philosophical point. All over the world, there's comments about this, you know, hate the sin, not the sinner. It's a Christian thing. When you're criticizing somebody else, you demon. There's one finger pointing out there and three pointing back at you. So when you criticize anybody else, and one criticizing God, who's in charge of the whole thing. Like that. So it's a very fundamental point to think about. I always remember in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, one should not become one's enemy's enemy. Right? People are giving you a hard time like that. Okay, so, you know. So Maharaj Parikshit, right? You know, what would Maharaj Parikshit have done if he wasn't following this when Sringi cursed him? Yeah. He would have cursed Sringi, right? Rat. You rascal kid. Okay, let's get a little less cantilever on it there. Face with a mechanical engineer here. Okay. Yeah. other thing to do is probably replace the grommet here like that. Okay, a devotee's conclusion is that no one is directly responsible for being a benefactor or mischief monger without the sanction of the Lord. Therefore, he does not consider anyone to be directly responsible for such action. But in both the cases, he takes it for granted that either benefit or loss is God-sent, and thus it is his grace, God's grace. In case of benefit, no one will deny that it is God-sent. But in cases of loss or reverse, one becomes doubtful about how the Lord could be so unkind to his devotee, as to put him in great difficulty. Jesus Christ was seemingly put into such great difficulty, being crucified by the ignorant. But he was not never angry at the mischief mongers. That is the way of accepting a thing, either favorably or unfavorably. It's very interesting, this is occurring right now because this is Easter week, right? This is the actual week commemorating when Jesus Christ was crucified. If there is a God. Wow. Thus, for a devotee, the identifier is equally a sinner, like the mischief monger. By God's grace, the devotee tolerates all reverses. Yeah? Wow. How many? All of them. Yeah. Unlimited patience. How much? Unlimited. You been through this? I guess anybody who's married has learned about unlimited patience. You're not unlimited, at least 40 years. Okay. Wow. That is the way of accepting a thing. Yeah. Thus, for a devotee, okay, yeah, by God's grace. Maharishi Pariksit observed this, and therefore he could understand that the bull was no other than the personality of religion himself. In other words, a devotee has no suffering at all, because so-called suffering is also God's grace for a devotee who sees God in everything. The cow and the bull never placed any complaint before the king for being tortured by the personality of Kali, although everyone lodges such complaints before the state authorities. Yeah. The extraordinary behavior of the bull made the king conclude that the bull was certainly the personality of religion, for no one else could understand the finer intricacies of the code of religion. Okay, next translation. Thus it is concluded that the Lord's energies are inconceivable. No one can estimate them by mental speculation or by word jugglery. And he goes to glorify the bull some more and how great he is. Okay. But then it says, Maharishi Pariksit, who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacified the personality of religion and the earth. Then he walked away and let the bull go on, being suffering. No. Then he took out his sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali. Yeah. So there's a subtle point, because from the Uttamadikari platform, Maharishi Pariksit would have said, yeah, right. It's all correct. Maybe you would have started helping Kali to beat the bull or something, you know, like that. But then Prabhupada, talking about the intricacies of karma, a-karma, b-karma, you know, he talks about the ultimate cause, the efficient cause, and the material cause. And I kept seeing these things popping up in Prabhupada's books for many, many years. But finally, we were looking at Aristotle. And Aristotle... It's going to go again and again. There you go. Aristotle. Aristotle. Talks about these causes. The ultimate cause, okay, the efficient cause, and the material cause. And this may have come in through Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta, and probably not from Prabhupada or Vishwanatha Chakravarti. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta were doing all this work of, you know, fundamental work. Okay, how far should we deviate here? Okay. Class is over when? What time?
9 o'clock.
Okay. Oh. 9 o'clock? Okay, quarter to nine. Okay, either way, it's a long time. Okay, we can deviate. Okay. a short review of Western history. Okay. Who is Socrates' disciple? Okay, Plato. Who's Plato's disciple?
Aristotle.
Yeah. So basically those three guys established almost all what we're talking about, our view of life. So Socrates, if you read his works, was a very religious guy. Probably liked him. You know, probably said he was the last honest man in Western philosophy and they killed him. You know? What else? He was a good boy. He just didn't have a guru. Because he came to the idea of Brahmans, you know, demigods, that kind of stuff. But, you know, he couldn't figure the rest out because he didn't have a guru. Okay. So anyway, his disciple, Plato, his disciple, Aristotle. But Aristotle was much more of a jnani. And Socrates actually was a bhakta in many senses like that. He wanted to see how these religious functions were going on for the demigods and personal feelings. But Aristotle was a pretty nice person, but he was very much a jnani. He gave everything a name, a category, a number, count them up, put them in boxes, all the matter, okay, men, women, over 21, under 21, okay, now we know. So Aristotle was this big guy putting everything with names and tags like that. And in India, it's there also too in terms of Nyaya, you know, which we all is also one of our curses, is facing the Nyayas who do the same thing, maybe a symptom of Kali Yuga. So then Aristotle's works, which were very extensive, he did a lot of work, you know, were lost to Western civilization, which was going on its own lines of Greek, Roman, you know, Christian, you know, Hebrew stuff, with some stuff from the north, the Norse gods and those guys, but not much. That didn't come through too much. So then later on we come down to St. Thomas Aquinas. Anybody know him? You heard about him? If you're Catholic, you've heard about him. And who took his PhD the same time? Who was his partner there? You know? Okay. Bonaventura. Yeah. And Bonaventura was Franciscan, and Thomas Aquinas was Dominican. Okay. I may be wrong on some of these points, but I don't think I am. So later on, I can have those things. I don't know. Don't kill anybody if somebody disagrees with me. But pretty much, I think it's going. So anyway, Franciscan and Dominican. And the Franciscans and Dominicans still argue because the Franciscans are more bhaktas and the Dominicans are more jnanis, like that, and so on. So still arguments in the Catholic Church over how to understand reality. But anyway, so they took their PhD from the University of France at the same time, and it was a big argument over who would take their PhD first, because that's more prestigious. And so, but the argument wasn't over who would take it first, the argument was over who would take it second. Because they both wanted to be the most humble. No, you take it first. You take it first. No, you're greater than I am. No, you're greater than I am. No, your hair is longer than mine. Yours is darker. Okay. Yeah. So it went on and on like this. The judges, French judges, are sitting there. You know, my God, come do some conclusion. So finally, Bonaventura won, and he took it second. And then probably not because of that exclusively, but then. Thomas Aquinas got some Arabic translations of Aristotle's works. And that's how it came into the West, and that's how it totally captured our development of philosophy. Our philosophy of nature, science, everything else became captured by Aristotle. And the Pope said, whatever Thomas Aquinas is presenting will be standard in all of our temples, churches, monasteries, like that. He's the Advaita Vyasa of our religion. And Bonaventura was much more like, oops, Aristotle's led to this thing, if you want to understand, you know, a dog, you cut him up in little pieces, right? That's how you understand the dog. You know, okay, now we understand what is a dog. You know? But Bonaventura was more like, make friends with the dog, give him some bread, like that, you know. And then that kind of thing. So we actually had a big choice and went a certain way in our development, philosophically like that. So on, you know. So I forgot why I was on this topic, but it's a good topic. But anyway, we developed a certain view of reality because of that. You know? And so, we become very materialistic because of that. And the solution, of course, is Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the same thing, Sankhya, everything else, but it teaches it in a personal sense like that. Even when Lord Kapiladev is teaching Sankhya to his mother in the third canto, because she says, please give me Lady Sankhya, because I'm not a big jnani. So he gives her Lady Sankhya, which even for us is difficult, challenging, you know. And he's telling her, Bamini, Mami, Just think of me as your little boy. That's the best thing. You're on the right path. You know, think of me as your child and love me and you know, see if I have warm socks and you know, if I'm going to grow up being a criminal. And, you know, all these kind of nice things. But yeah, mix it with some of this Sankhya I'm giving you. You know, so we can begin to see, like, Prabhu, I'm experiencing such ecstasy. I chant and it's so beautiful and so sweet. And when you start to analyze where the sensation is coming from, it's actually coming out from the mantra stimulating your stomach, right? Like that. And when your stomach is not nice, when you chant, you don't feel all the bhava and everything else. Okay, like, okay. So a little Sankhya tossed in here about loving the holy name will actually reveal that actually, you know, I'm still pretty much in the bodily platform. You know? And I should try and look for the super soul, which is a little bit above my stomach, I hear it like that. Okay, yeah. So this is why the Bhagavatam gives all this analysis, science, and everything else in a very fantastic sense. Prabhupada says the Bhagavatam verses will be the basis for great discoveries in science. It's a fact. But it does it all in a very personal sense, like that, you know. And when we do this, there's no harm. Then we can look at the dog. Okay, the dog has a foot, the dog has four legs, he has a tail, you know, we have this and that. But we're not going to try and cut him up. He's our friend. You want to understand, you know, this is the mouth. Okay, our friend needs to eat. You know? So very, very excellent illumination, you know, for Srimad Bhagavatam. You know? And then, coming back to Aristotle, Aristotle gives these analysis, which Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur are using, which matches our philosophy too. There are three causes. Okay, the police pull over some boys driving a little dangerously, and they pull over and say, "Let me see your license, whatever. What's that on the floor there?" So there's empty beer bottles. Okay, so therefore we should take the beer to jail, right? Because the cause of the crime is the beer. It is. It's the material cause. Okay. And the ultimate cause is that the father gave the keys to the car and $20 to his kids to go to the football game and come back like that. So he's the ultimate cause. But the efficient cause is the boys. So who goes to jail? The father or the beer? The boys go to jail. So who is Maharaj Parikshit going to chop his head off? You know, the stick? I am not beating them, Your Honor. The stick is beating them. Oh, you're right. Let me chop the stick up a little piece like that. You rascal stick. Or let me go looking for God. Okay, God, you rascal God. You caused this. You created people like this. Right? Yeah? No? Maharaj Parikshit is Kali. The personality of Kali is going to get it. You know? So it's a very good analysis because this is a fact. Yes, you know, Krishna is the cause of all causes. One time, there was a fellow named Bogilal Patel. Okay, I think Subhat Maharaj talked a lot about him. Bogilal Patel. Okay, and he had a really nice garden. He got some land from his father, put a nice fence around it, you know, and started growing very, very wonderful vegetables, fruits, flowers, was making money. He was winning prizes, getting respect, everything else. And one day he didn't latch the gate so nicely, and a cow was attracted. She pushed it open and came inside and started eating stuff. And he said he started beating on her. He became enraged and killed her. Okay. Then sometime later, you know, the Yamadutas came and take him to hell. And he said, "Why are you taking me to hell? I've always done such good things." "Because you killed this cow." And he said, "I didn't kill the cow. God is the cause of all causes. You know, he made me do it. You go arrest God." And he started chasing him out. You know. And the Yamadutas weren't very bright. They kind of lacked force of intelligence, so they got chased out. So they went to see Yamaraj. And they told Yamaraj this whole story, and Yamaraj says, okay, you go pick up this guy here, like, you know, whatever his name is, I don't know. Pick somebody there, George Bush. He's got a little bit of a reaction coming there. You know. Not a lot, I'm American. Typical regime. George Bush is a good person. Okay. But something maybe, a little bit of instruction from the Yamadutas. So anyway, they went off, and Yamaraj disguised himself as a sailor and was walking down the road, and he came to the, you know, where Bogilal Patel's garden was. He put his arms in the fence. He's looking at him, working away industriously. So he reaches over and picks a rose, you know, snap! And then Bogilal hears that and goes over and grabs it and says, "What are you doing? You got no right to take that. You know, I win prizes with these things, you know." And then Yama says, "Oh, I'm sorry. It was just so beautiful like that, you know. And your garden is wonderful." And he says, "Yes, I worked very hard here." And he said, "Wow, it's incredible. You must have a lot of help." He said, "No, I do it all myself." And that. So then Yamaro says, "So you're responsible for everything that happens here?" And Bogilal says, "Yes." And Yamaro said, "Then who killed the cow?" So this is a very, very common question when we're doing preaching work like that. So many times people ask about reincarnation and karma like that, and destiny. Hamlet, what's the most famous question in the world? Yeah, to be or not to be, to take arms against a sea of Kauravas, to fight, to oppose them, to die, perchance to dream. So it's like we have a whole PowerPoint show with Hamlet and Arjuna. And it's just so connected. And the question is the same question about what is right, what is wrong, especially when it comes down to applying these things with your own family, your own institution, your own ISKCON. Then it becomes, it's heavy, you know. And so that's why the two most famous books in the world, Hamlet and Arjuna. You know, when and how do we take action against family members, right? In terms of destiny, you know, even if we don't want to do it, you know. And so, big question, you know. And so here we get a nice resolution. Yeah, yes. Ultimately, we should not understand. We should understand that ultimately God's arranging everything. Did Draupadi become angry at Krishna? Huh? No, she didn't. Before the game of dice, everybody knows it's going to be some dishonest thing. Come, please come, my dear cousins, for a friendly game of dice. And Yudhishthira had to go because his uncle invited him. He was like his leader. Yeah. And everyone's talking about it. So Krishna meets Bhishma. And what did he tell Bhishma?
Don't get involved.
Huh?
Don't get involved.
He said, "I think there's going to be you." He said, "Granddaddy." Yeah, what is it, Krishna? You're a Kshatriya, right? Yes. I want to beg some charity from you. Okay, whatever you want. Everybody knows there's going to be some kind of like a dharma, you know, coming up in this game. And I know because you're the oldest person, it's going to come to you to make a decision about what is dharma and what is not a dharma. So I want you to promise me that you, if they ask you this, you know, you won't make any decision. You know, you won't make a decision about it. So he said, "All right." You know. So it happened. They drug Draupadi in this horrible circumstance. You know, she's maybe like a 16-year-old girl. She's being drugged in front of all the respectable people on the face of the earth in a disgusting, horrible condition like that. Her husbands won't help her, you know, like that. And she's a daughter-in-law. If she pleads to people, I'm in somebody else's house. You know, I deserve even more protection. So nobody will help her. So finally Dhritarashtra says, "Okay, it's too hard for me to decide, you know, what's right and what's wrong, so I ask Bhishma. Whatever Bhishma says, I'll accept." And Bhishma is about to say, "Of course, you idiots, this is a dharma. You can't do this to a girl, your daughter-in-law." But then Bhishma remembers what Krishna asked him, and a kind of unusual smile goes across his face, and he says, "I can't say." Like that. And everybody thinks that you can't discriminate what it is like that, you know. And he's thinking, "My God, this is terrible. It's horrible, you know." But, you know, Bhagavan is playing his game like that. And in the end, everything is going to work out, you know, perfectly like that. So that's it. Hamlet's conclusion was, Hamlet, his uncle tried to kill him. He tried to run away from the thing, the ocean. He got tossed into the ocean. The ocean took him back. The guys were supposed to kill him, got killed. It was just like, he could not avoid this confrontation of having to kill his uncle and chastise his mother, you know. So finally his conclusion is that everybody has a destiny, right? And maybe it's roughly cut, okay, like that. But you got it. How much money you're going to make is fixed by your karma, right? How tall you're going to be is fixed by your karma. Your romance, unlucky in love, okay, fixed by your karma. Your fame, your health, you know, okay. You know, some people, they try their very, very best, but they always have, you know, health problems, you know. They finish off the kidney stones and they get a lung infection. They finish off a lung infection and their jaw starts falling off, you know. I know, I'm reporting somebody, you know. Anybody here have karma for some weird thing that always happens to you?
I'm late for
everything. Huh?
I'm late for
everything. Okay. something unusual that always keeps up coming up again and again?
Only it's falling down.
Falling down, okay. My karma is short pants. Yes, again and again, it's my sannyas nature. For Sankirtan, I got this store had these pants on sale. Okay, I'll get them. And the kind that aren't cut, that, you know, the length is not cut. So I went in to the tailor, measures me, and I came back, and as soon as I put them on, I felt, and I knew, yeah, and they were too short, you know. And the tailor was this, you know, he flipped out. He was a professional tailor. This is like cutting somebody's hand off or something. He was literally pulling them, like trying to make them, you know, like that. And I said, what's all, it always happens like this is my karma. And he kind of like nodded like, yeah, because he deals with people, no? Like that, you know? Certain girls, it doesn't matter what they put on, they look good, right? It doesn't matter how horrible it is, when they put it on, it looks good. It's like, it doesn't matter how much you try, right? You know? But on the other hand, you know, even though you look terrible, every single picture you get of yourself comes out great, you know? There's this one girl, she was in the front of one magazine, right? One lady, one girl, she was a famous model. But devotees said, whenever you saw her in the temple and everything else, she looked okay, you know. But it wasn't like she was this multi-million-dollar, you know, face. She'd walk in the temple, everybody would just like, look at her. But when she got in front of a camera, you know, this, you know, photogenic term is there, you know. So everybody has your karma, your destiny, like that. And so what's the thing to do? You know, usually, what did Krishna recommend Arjuna should do? He should avoid his karma?
Tolerate.
No, not tolerate it. He should get into it. He should use it for me. Yeah, go out and kill 640 million people. Yeah, actually probably 320 million. So that's it. That's the answer. You should know this. You know, whatever passion you have a passion for gardening. Okay, tell the temple president. Probably said temple president should engage people this way. You know, if you got 5 cooks and 1 book distributor, okay, then work on Sunday feasts, work on festivals, you know. Don't try and force book distribution. No. And make the book distribution come out of prasadam distribution. Like that. So that's the challenge for the president, is to find out what everybody's nature is and engage them according to that with fresh challenges, enthusiasm. So what is my, you should find this out. What is my nature? What is my dharma? What is my karma? Go to a palmist. Go to 5, 6 astrologers, probably said. You know, take personality inventories. You know, and just chant Hare Krishna and talk to people. And you see, yeah, this is that, okay. And then do it for Krishna, like that. And then that will lead it to alter the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness, you'll be able to see very clearly what is your deeper nature. And then finally, what is your nature beyond this world altogether? So don't get hung up criticizing other people about what's wrong, this and that. You'll waste all your time, you know, like that. It's Maya's trick. Maya doesn't care if you love her or hate her, right? You notice this? Yeah, she doesn't care if you love her or hate her. Either way, she's got you, you know, like that. So if you're not becoming lusty after you, she'll try and make you angry at her, you know. So either way. We just say, we deal with the problem, we deal with who's directly involved, we make a direct solution like that, practical solution, and then we go on with the real thing, which is self-introspection. We try and look at people beyond their reactions, what's happening like that. I know different devotees, they have this, you know, as soon as you know one topic comes up, you know how they're going to react, you know they're going to become angry about this, you know they can't control themselves, so, yeah. Try and make some adjustment, deal with it, come back later, like that, you know? And try and deal with the person, right? In the mode of goodness, on the spiritual platform. It's a very important verse, very important concept. This chapter especially is about Kali Yuga and how to deal with reality in ISKCON, you know? Same problems we'll find everywhere like that, you know, even in ISKCON, because it's Kali Yuga. Okay. So, any questions, comments? Yes, what is your good name? Bhakta?
Michael.
Okay. He's one of the archangels.
Yes. Just talking about dealing with problems with the ISKCON, you glorified to Maharaj Krishna before.
Yes.
Did you come across Govinda Swami Maharaj in trouble? Govinda Swami Maharaj, did you come across him in trouble?
A little bit, sometimes, not a lot. Yeah. No, he was a very nice person. Like that. think particularly. Of course, you know his biography. You read his biography? Yeah, very nice. How he grew up. He had the same advantage, you know, of being born in Vaishnava family, growing up in Vaishnava environment, which is very wonderful, very useful, Prabhupada says like that, you know. And then he came in contact with Prabhupada. And of course, he was so dedicated, Prabhupada told him to translate the Bhagavatam into Aryan language. And he, I don't know, how far did he get? Oh, okay. But he finished all. He finished all 12 cantos? Oh, wow. Yeah. It's a very wonderful work. It's difficult. Translating is translating a culture. You know, one cultural perspective to another. It's not just like having some machine do it. You know, it's a big work. Every day. Yeah, yeah. He wouldn't eat until a certain amount was done and so on. Like that. Yeah. I know. One story, that's all I remember it, that one of his Western disciples, one girl, any questions, she said, Maharaj, how can I get Krishna? So he looked at her and started kind of laughing. He said, oh, you want to get Krishna? You're going to suffer, Baba. Long time, Baba. Yeah. Yeah. And he would, when he was traveling, he would ask devotees, like, you know, you're a Brahmin? He would ask some questions about verses and philosophy. If he didn't know, he would say, Mitacharya. Like, that's, I said, no, he expected that Brahmanas should be educated. You know, Brahmanas should have qualities.
He asked Maharajas as well, do you know why I fought Vishnu Dadas, or do you know why this?
Yeah.
Oh, no. You don't know it?
Yeah.
You don't know? You've got all these devotees, and you don't know?
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. But he would also do it in a nice way. You know?
Yeah, of course.
He wasn't looking for people to chastise. He was doing it to try and like stimulate people, you know, to become serious about this. Yeah. Everybody should know. You know, was the story of the cobbler and the Brahmin? Who knows? Which of the ladies know the story of the cobbler and the Brahmin? What's the story there?
Narada Muni goes to a Brahmin, and the Brahmin asks him to tell when he's going to be liberated.
Yes.
Reading an elephant and
with the eye of a needle.
And so when he goes to the Brahmana and he says that, the Brahmana says, what? That's nonsense. That's not possible. So you could see that the Brahmana had no faith in Vishnu that he could do anything. And whilst when he said it to the cobbler started crying and said, wow, my Lord is so wonderful, he can do anything.
Very important point. Then Narada Muni says, you actually believe this? And then he
gave the example, yes, in the banyan tree.
I'm working under a banyan tree. Yeah.
And in each seed, there's a whole banyan tree.
Yeah, little seeds fall down, I think. And every one, if you've never seen, like, a banyan is a fig. So fig seeds, you know, they're so tiny. But each of those can have a tree which will cover, you know, 40 square kilometers, or that way, 20 square kilometers, like that. It's all in that one little seed. You know? So what's the problem? Putting the elephant through the eye of a needle. If you can put the whole banyan tree inside that little seed. You know? Wow. So again, he didn't have blind faith. In Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Prabhupada says, blind faith is condemned, which is our whole thing. We have a very good explanation of faith, which other people have a big problem with. I've seen big, expensive Mormon movies where they can't deal with it. So very good. The Bible says, in your heart, you should have faith in God like a little child. But in your head, you should be as clever as a snake. As clever as a snake. Okay. So yeah, we should believe in Krishna and just trust Him and chant Hare Krishna. But we should develop very good, sharp intelligence like that, you know. And, you know, somebody can be very simple, intellectually simple, like a cobbler, or somebody can be, you know, big intelligence, like some Nobel laureate who speaks 14 languages, which is common, you know, analytical and everything else like that. You know? Either way, but you just take whatever intelligence you have and purify it by by studying Bhagavatam and Gita, and then he can explain things very nice, very rational. Madhya Madhukari has faith in the process, he's concerned, but he can't deal with many arguments and stuff and different things like that. When he goes ahead, based on scripture, he develops a totally, you know, sophisticated logic, which allows him to explain everything and clarifies it to others and himself like that. So the difference between Uttamadhikari and Majjhimadhikari, one is a developed appreciation for scriptures. Krishna book is enough. and be able to put it in terms of, like, you know, common sense like that and so on. Yeah. Yeah. So the other comments or questions? The idea, I think, was supposed to be tonight. It's just supposed to go on Light of the Bhagavad tonight, tomorrow morning and tomorrow night. And we have some very good contacts here. We've been doing this kind of academic preaching for a long time, and because of that, maybe some success in spite of our deficiencies. So we have a very good contact here, one Professor Ian Mabbitt, who's at Monash University. And he actually arranged for us to give a lecture there with the Department of Asian Studies, like that, you know, invited us. And he said, it may not be a lot of people because it's the Easter break, but we're having the people, the director, to send the invitations out. And it's supposed to be Friday morning at 11 a.m. And I think it was open to everybody. And I gave them a choice of topics, and they picked on Sankhya, like that. So we'll try and go through this whole thing of, you know, of matching up Western philosophy of nature, science, with classical Indian and Occidental philosophy of nature, like that. So it should be a lot of fun, you know. Might be a nice lecture and stuff like that, you know.
Students have gone back from the Easter break today.
Oh, it's finished?
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe different schools have different standards.
Yeah, RMIT is one of the university in the city. Yeah. So they've gone back probably.
Okay. So maybe we'll see, because it's a little bit of short notice. But anyway, we're doing that. And also we're trying to, like, promote Light of the Bhagavad. I guess we have 7 more minutes. Okay, just right. Prabhupada was invited to a congress, symposium, it was a congress, on cultivation of the human spirit in 1961 in Japan. And he was invited to go there, and he thought, okay, most of the people are going to be from China and Japan, and Chinese and Japanese people are very fond of descriptions of nature. Actually, you can't beat them, so wonderful in their literature. So therefore, he decided chapter 20, in the 10th canto, and it will be the basis for his program. Because the Bhagavatam is the heart of all of our literature, everything in the Kali Yuga. Chapter 20 is description of autumn. And Sukadeva Goswami is giving so many lessons from nature. The waterfalls mean this, the lightning flashing in the clouds means this, you know. And it's a very nice way to introduce different concepts, you know. So Prabhupada then sent off to the organizers a purport, you know, explanation, translation and purport for each verse. He also gave them a description of pictures that could be drawn to illustrate these. You know. But he couldn't go because of lack of funds. So actually it was after Prabhupada left his body that Tamal Krishna Maharaj thought this is a really good idea, that he organized it. He's got a very, very good artist, Madame Li Yang Chong. And she's one of the very reputed, respected artists, you know, in very classical style, Rongbi, very Taoistic. And devotees say she would come often to discuss with Tamal Krishna Maharaj the descriptions, the content of the verse. And she did, of course, in these fantastic, you know, pictures like that. Actually, we have the original files, like 20 to 30 megabytes each one. So you can blow them up to 2 meters and with no loss of quality. You know? And then you see she has so many details. There's like stories in there and very subtle like things, you know. So what we're doing, I was attracted to this, I went for different reasons, my nature, my preaching style. And I discovered after we started doing it, organizing a symposium, you know, based on this, following the original idea, that Tamal Krishna Maharaj had organized the same thing for Cambridge University, but he left his body right before, you know, it was finished like that, you know. And so maybe, you know, I feel, okay, maybe we're trying to, like, you know, follow in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's footsteps, everything else. So what we do, we organize, like, you find some place, like again, like with Monash University, we meet somebody there, we show the book or somebody, so that's very nice, yeah, we can do that. I'm a senior professor in the Department of Cultural Anthropology or History or something like that. And you can set up a display in the lobby of our thing there. We handle maybe like about 12 pictures, because 48 is too much. We've done 48, this is overwhelming, you know. So 12 is enough to give a nice sample of the art. You set it up maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks before your program, and then you press to come, and maybe on two or three or four days you're there. And so, okay, so people can come these days and we'll give you a guided tour. So elementary schools, high schools, art students, contact different people, and you take them around and show them the art, explain it. We also have like little extract of three verses, four verses, and one little folder like that, four color. And so we sell it for maybe $1 or something. The book goes for $10, $15. And people, okay, take something with them, get some prasadam, package it up. Oh, very nice. Yeah. This is for preaching. It's for a certain kind of people. It's not so much aimed at coming to a conclusion. That's not necessary. I'm trying to generate interest, right? And bring people to get involved, to start talking, wake them up. Yeah. So anyway, they come to these gallery things, and then all the time you're advertising, you take the art and make a poster. You blow up one of the paintings to 2 meters. Okay, what's that? Oh, there's a poster. Okay, the whole symposium. And handbills. Okay, I'll take a few of these. Yeah. And then the last week you can have a couple workshops like that on cow protection. That's one theme in here. So many themes on Varna Ashram. You know, divorce, the feminine element. Okay, well, what's that? Yeah, creates some interest. That's the lightning flashing from one cloud to the other. And probably gets a very nice discussion, you know. I mean, is divorce a topic in Australia that people want to talk about, they're worried about? Yeah, it's a problem everywhere. It's a problem. People are suffering because they don't know what to do. So we have some suggestions, very good suggestions, very depth suggestions, practical, you know. And we've solved this problem in ISKCON. No divorce in ISKCON. Statistically speaking, we're about 15% better than the average population. Yeah. ISKCON is about 15% better than the average people. But if you know statistics, 15% is actually quite an accomplishment. Yeah. So we're doing a little better. And so it's a big thing. Even we're trying to deal with this. This is where your japa and everything else comes to the point of real practical reality. And we're actually doing pretty well if you look at our society and stuff like that. I think something like 40% of all the people Prabhupada gave sannyas left their ashram. Since 1992, when we tried to adjust things and make it practically, like only one person has left the ashram like that. Only one person has left sannyas ashram since 1992. So we've done a lot of improvement. We've understood a lot of things about what's going on. So Varna Ashram, there's a lot here, very nice topics, nice pictures, nice purports to use to stimulate discussion. And you get some couple topics, two or three. You invite sociologists, you invite different people, different church, whatever the topic is, cow protection, the ultimate goal of the soul, esoteric hankerings of the soul, St. Bernard of Clairvaux, the Song of Solomon. And you can relate it to so many topics, and it covers so many things like that. And you got the art, you've got the purport. Hey, it's just like ready-made. Just, stir and bake, you know. So that's what Prabhupada's doing for us, you know. And so then, okay, then you have these good workshops and people come to them. They have good discussions about the things and people disagree. And we learn a lot, and we learn a lot from other people. Many Christian churches are dealing with divorce. Online is a survey that a couple can take before they get married to see if they're compatible. After taking this survey, 40% of the people take it decide not to get married. After doing this, it's that simple. And they lived happily ever after. Yeah. So ISKCON devotees are starting to use this. The Grihastha Vision Team, just take this. You have great parenting skills, you're both great devotees, but you have horrible conflict resolution skills. So before we'll give you certification, you've got to take a course on how to resolve fights. And then, oh, wow. Yeah. So there's a lot of resources available from other people like that. So these symposiums actually work for everybody, not just to preach, but also to learn. Yeah. Okay, they finish the whole thing off with a big gala event. One big hotel with tablecloths, inviting movie stars, everything else. A cultural event. And then we have a really, really good movie, which we can show, which we one big director in Peru did. Light of the Bhagavat, Peruvian Reflections. It's a really good movie. I've seen it 52 times. And I'm quite happy and looking forward to seeing it again. But it requires a big screen because he's used to working in these big stage shows. On a television, it's like, but on a big screen, it's impressive, you know. And then you sell the books. It's the idea. Of course, you've got to get the book back in print, but you sell the books, you make photocopies. And then you follow up on people. Let's read together. We got a group, we're reading this, discussing it. You want to come to a discussion group. And people like to belong to a book reading club. And after that, that's really good. It's nice. What's next? Your ever well-wisher? The biography of the author? Oh, okay, I've been wondering, okay. And then finally, Nectar of Instruction, right? So people read Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada's biography, and Light of the Bhagavat, and you're ready to become a devotee. So tonight, I guess we'll meet in the theater?
Temple.
Okay, tonight. And we'll have a PowerPoint show on Light of the Bhagavat.
Unless you need to use projector, we can use the theater.
Can't we? Well, can't. Because so theater tonight. Because change it. Okay, so tonight we'll do a PowerPoint show. Tomorrow morning we can do some more content, and then tomorrow night we can see the movie. Like that. It'll be free popcorn. What you do is you make the popcorn really salty, and the drinks are $1 each. Thank you very much. On time. Hare Krishna. Back to Godhead. Yes, so what is your good name?
Murli Dharatas.
Oh, have I met him before?
No, my match.
Okay, yeah.
You were saying about the name of the book of Radhika Raman, the latest book. What is it called? Contemporary?
Oh, the name of it. It's actually not quite published. It's like... It's like the press is just about to release it.
You gave a caption, contemporary something.
Contemporary Thinking on the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Is that the name of the book?
No. And probably you have a book on Amazon, it won't show up yet, like that.
Okay.
So, but it's Cornell Press or someone like that. Okay, it's Columbia Press, big press. And the thing is, it's very difficult to get a contract with them. But then they asked the Krishnakshetra and Radhika to do a summary of the Bhagavatam. Because they said a lot of people may not have read it. So they went through a lot of work. They did a very academic summary, and they said it increased their faith in Prabhupada so much.